Okay, good morning, everybody. I'd like to welcome Alan Wilson, Chairman, President, and CEO of McCormick Company since 2008, and Gordon Stetz, who's been the company's CFO since 2007. Alan joined the company in 1993 from P&G and played a range of roles at McCormick, including President of North America and COO. Spices and seasonings seem very on-trend today with consumer needs in developed markets. People's appetite for new flavors, cooking from scratch, interest in superfoods, watching of the Food Network, and even more sophisticated approaches to grilling are all helping the top line. So here to tell us a little bit more about the outlook for McCormick, I'll hand it over to Alan. Thank you.
Thanks, Alexia. We're really proud to be here and to be able to talk about our business opportunities and some very recent news that we'll get into a little bit later. Our remarks today will include some forward-looking statements. Let me remind you that our actual results can vary from these projections, and we'll refer you to the annual report and website, which contain additional information regarding our business risks. At McCormick, we bring passion to flavor. Flavor is an exciting and growing business with people in the U.S. and all around the world exploring new tastes and adventures in eating. In a recent U.S. survey, nearly two-thirds of consumers said that flavor makes all the difference in my meals. This enthusiasm translates to a robust outlook for global sales growth and products that deliver flavor. Euromonitor has projected sales growth through 2017 for the top flavor categories. Among these categories, McCormick's largest growth platform, spices and seasonings, ranked number 3 in expected sales growth. As the global leader in this category, we have an 18% global share, more than twice that of the next largest competitor. In markets around the world, we deliver flavor across two segments, consumer and industrial. Our consumer business has strong brand leadership positions in key markets. The spice and seasoning category comprises about half of consumer business sales. For this category, McCormick's share is well above that of the next largest competitor in 5 of our top 6 markets. As a category leader for our retail customers, we supply everything from premium gourmet items to value-priced private label items. And our innovation and brand marketing are a key driver of category growth. Beyond spices and seasonings, we're a leading player in the next largest category, recipe mixes, and brands where we are a regional leader, such as Zatarain's rice mixes, Vahiné dessert items in France, or Aeroplane gelatin in Australia. Through our industrial business, we supply multinational industry leaders, serving 9 of the top 10 global food companies and 8 of the top 10 food service companies. These customers give us exposure to some of the latest industry trends, and we partner with them on innovation with a broad range of flavor solutions. Our industrial business is highly complementary to our consumer business. It provides scale and spreads costs, and often countercyclical to the consumer business. Importantly, we've established beachheads in new geographies through our industrial business, including our entry into China nearly 25 years ago, and more recently as we've established a presence in South America. Together, across our consumer and industrial business segments, we believe no matter where or what you eat each day, you're likely to enjoy something that's flavored by McCormick. From facilities in 24 countries, our brands reach more than 110 countries. Our nearly 10,000 employees are a key ingredient to our success. In locations around the world, our employees are highly skilled and fully engaged, and we're committed to supporting them through teamwork, training, and other resources to excel in their role and contribute to growth. We believe that our people, our business segments, and our global footprint have us well positioned to meet consumer demand for flavor. Let's turn next to how we're driving growth with an effective strategy and update you on our specific initiatives. After that, I'll share a few comments on the current operating environment and how we're adapting, and then Gordon and I would welcome your questions. Let's start with our growth strategy. The strategy is straightforward. Invest in the business to increase sales and profits and fuel these investments with our CCI program. As evidence of this effectiveness, this strategy has underpinned more than a decade of strong financial results. And to support our long-term goals, to grow sales 4-6%, increase operating income 7-9%, achieve a 9-11% increase in EPS, and with our dividend, deliver double-digit total shareholder return. These financial objectives are backed by our latest five-year results. During this period, we've delivered compound annual growth rates right in line with our long-term goals, with sales up 6%, an 8% increase in operating income, and EPS up 9%. Along with these growth rates, McCormick generates strong cash. We more than doubled cash flow from operations in the past decade and delivered a record $455 million in 2012. During this period, we demonstrated a balanced use of cash through capital expenditures, dividends, acquisitions, and share repurchases. We expect 2013 to be another year in which we fund each of these four areas. We're committed to returning a portion of cash to our shareholders and have increased our dividend in each of the past 27 years. From 2007 to 2012, we returned nearly $1 billion of cash to our shareholders in dividends and share repurchases. We're investing in the business behind our three key growth initiatives: to drive our base business, develop innovative new products, and expand our portfolio of leading brands and geographic presence through acquisitions. Base business growth encompasses marketing our brands to consumers, along with our in-store activity at retail and opportunities to expand our distribution. We're achieving strong returns from our brand marketing efforts and have doubled our spending since 2005, reaching nearly $200 million in 2012. A recent measure of ROI in the U.S. shows returns ahead of industry averages, and in our top five markets, McCormick's share of voice is 60% or greater in the spice and seasonings category. Our marketing messages are designed to help consumers prepare flavorful, healthy meals that their families will love. In recent years, we directed more of our spending toward digital marketing. In 2012, digital marketing comprised 12% of our total marketing dollars and was three times the amount spent in 2010. As you saw in the previous slide, digital marketing has one of the highest returns for McCormick and for the industry. Let me show you some highlights from our past 12 months, including our Griller Hood and holiday campaigns, our dinner party idea program, and health and wellness messaging. In the U.S., we've had some great results from our digital marketing, including a 32% increase in site searches for our gourmet dinner party program, a 25% first quarter increase in Facebook fans, and a 47% increase in unique visitors to McCormick.com website. In addition to our lead in brand marketing, we're at the forefront of flavor innovation. For our consumer business, we launched more than 250 new items in 2012, and we're on track for a similar number in 2013. These include cross-marketing of winning items such as recipe inspirations, grilling products, and gourmet recipe mixes. Our gourmet recipe mixes are an all-natural blend of seasonings used to make delicious meals. Following success in the UK, we launched these in the US, and we're attracting new users with 35% of sales of these products incremental to the category. Our 2013 innovation behind regional leaders includes Zatarain's Big Easy in a microwavable pouch in the U.S., 12 new Vahine dessert items in Europe, and in India, Kohinoor brand rice and spice blends and two-minute meals. We've made significant investments to continue to create leading capabilities and expand best practices around the world. And we've set a goal by 2015 for at least 10% of annual sales to come from products that are launched in the last 3 years. Our third avenue of growth is acquisitions, which have contributed to one-third of McCormick's sales growth over the past 5 years. We seek leading brands that build on core global growth platforms in developed markets, expanding growth platforms in developing markets, and working to enter and increase scale in emerging markets. Since 2000, we've established our portfolio with a number of great brands through acquisitions and joint ventures that are shown here. During this period, we established a steady and consistent track record based on financial discipline, clear business plans, and strong execution. Behind our acquisition activity and strong organic growth, we increased the percentage of sales in emerging markets to 14% in 2012, double the percentage of sales in 2007. I'd like to show you the latest ads we're running to support the Kuhnauer brand and in Poland to advertise Camus recipe mixes.
Aap, hoy kisir mein biryani. Bhai ka bas kehna, maa ka kaam, maa ko hi karne do. Aur aapko kaise maloom? Asli basmati. Aapko kaise pata? Kohinoori asli basmati hai? Kohinoor ki basmati meters. Iske zariye कोई भी बासमती के दाने की लंबाई रंग और खुशबू जैसी चीजें खुद चेक कर सकता है और पहचान सकता है असली बासमती और अम्मा माँ का काम बेटी भी तो कर सकती है कोहिनूर असली बासमती और बाकी सबके लिए कोहिनूर बासमती मीट
Wypróbuj nowy fix Camis spaghetti bolognese z suszonymi pomidorami. Dzięki wieloletniemu doświadczeniu wybraliśmy najwyższej jakości składniki do stworzenia fiksu o niepowtarzalnym smaku. Odkryj, jak wyjątkowo smakują potrawy przygotowane z fiksem Camis. Nowość Fiksy Camis. Camis. Życie ze smakiem.
We set a goal to reach 20% of sales from emerging markets by 2013. And expect to achieve this through a combination of strong organic growth rates and additional acquisitions. Beyond our consolidated businesses, McCormick has further exposure to emerging markets through our joint ventures and export business, which is something that you have noted in your analysis, Alexia. Our latest acquisition news is in China. After 22 years of organic growth in China, we've completed our first acquisition in the market, Wuhan Asia Pacific Condiments, WAPC, which we announced earlier this morning. This business is expected to increase our sales in China by more than 60%. We announced this agreement about 9 months ago, and we're pleased to announce the completion this morning. WAPC is a leader in chicken bouillon, a product used by more than half of consumers in central China every day in every meal to enhance the flavor of their food. Founded in 1998, this business has approximately 900 employees, a modern production facility, and a powerful network of distributors. It's an excellent complement to our existing businesses, not only in its product portfolio, but geographically, with a base in central China compared to our current presence in the coastal region. Let's spend a minute on our important element of our strategy, our fuel for growth, Comprehensive Continuous Improvement, or CCI. We have a long track record of productivity improvement and cost savings and launched our CCI program in 2009 to create structure around this effort. In 2011 and 2012, cost savings from CCI were a critical way to help offset steep material cost increases. In 2013, as material cost inflation has eased a bit, we expect CCI to contribute to improved margins. High-performance teams throughout the company are working on productivity improvements, and long term, we expect to achieve at least $45 million in annual cost savings. Investing in the business to grow sales and profit and fueling these improvements with CCI is an effective strategy that we believe is sustainable. We've created solid momentum with our initiatives to grow sales and are doing so profitably with a pay-as-you-go approach in each major market. However, those of you who follow the food industry know that we operate in a challenging environment. One of the biggest headwinds in the past 2 years has been the higher cost of raw and packaging materials. While input cost inflation has eased in 2013, we still face challenges. One of the most significant challenges to our profit growth in 2013 is an increase in retirement benefit expense caused by the low interest rate environment. As for our two business segments, in our consumer business, we reported strong sales growth throughout the first quarter. However, we continue to face pressure from private label competition in several of our markets, with sales of private label outpacing sales of brands in certain markets. We are responding by directing our product development toward differentiated items that offer consumers a unique flavor experience, by ensuring that consumers perceive a value in our brands through careful pricing and promotions, and by gaining distribution in all channels. We want our brands available to consumers no matter where they shop. We believe that these actions are building our brand equity, and we're well positioned to grow as consumers strive to balance flavor, convenience, health, and value. Our industrial business is facing a different set of pressures, as demonstrated in our first quarter results. Heading into 2013, we knew we were going to have a tough year ago comparison with a 13% sales increase in the first quarter of 2012. However, we faced weak demand from quick service restaurants in our Americas and Asia Pacific regions. In the U.S., overall restaurant traffic declined early in 2013, along with same-store sales. This has impacted the quick service segment, which is a large part of our customer base. We remain cautious, although we're encouraged to see some improvement in the more recent period. In China, the quick service restaurants we serve were affected early in 2013 with an issue with chicken sales. More recently, concerns over bird flu has affected businesses for these customers. While these challenges have certainly impacted our sales to the restaurant business, we're benefiting from product innovation underway by leading food manufacturers. At this point in the year, based on our product development activity and pipeline, we're confident that our customers continue to value McCormick's creativity, new product development, and technical expertise. We expect to return to growth in sales and profit in the second half of 2013. It's essential that we approach our business with a degree of agility, adapting to the current business conditions of our customers and actions of our consumers. We believe our business and our shareholders benefit from McCormick's balanced portfolio between the consumer and industrial businesses, a range of products that provides everything from value-priced items to premium gourmet products, strong leadership in developed markets, and a growing presence in emerging markets. McCormick brings passion to flavor. We have a focused business and employees around the world that are united by our mission to save the world from boring food. Investors have responded to our financial performance and prospects for growth, and as a result, McCormick's total shareholder return has exceeded that of the food group and the broader stock market index. I'm going to wrap up my remarks with these key takeaways. McCormick's a global leader meeting consumer demand for flavor. We have growth initiatives underway to drive sales and profits. The company has a sound balance sheet and strong cash flow, and a strategy that is effective and sustainable. We're positioned for another decade of growth. Alexia, we're ready for questions.
Great. Okay, so if you have questions, feel free to write them down on the cards on your seat, and we'll gather them up and get going here. Maybe just to kick things off, a question on how you manage your SKU count. I can imagine with a business like spices and seasonings, it's very tempting to go for new flavors, and proliferation could be a problem.
Sure.
How do you manage that to stop it going too far?
We tend to have a weed and feed strategy, which is there are always products that are starting to decline that may not be quite as on trend as products that are starting to develop. And so we tend to replace those, not on a one-in, one-out basis, because our category is really profitable for the retailers. And so we continue to believe and we continue to drive that there is pretty good justification for increasing the space for our category. On the other hand, we recognize that it's not going to be unreasonable proliferation. So we have a constant change. We discontinue items and then add new items as we hit the new trends.
Moving over to emerging markets here, how are margins in your emerging markets relative to your domestic margins?
Well, as we've well stated, our highest margins are our U.S. consumer business. And we believe that that we can, over time, continue to drive growth in our emerging markets. And it's important that we're there, and we are there, and we can continue to improve margins that will help the company. Because of our pay-as-you-go strategy, we are not operating at losses currently in any of our markets, our emerging markets especially. But we are making investments, but we're making modest investments to grow. So we think we're balancing that more aggressive growth from emerging markets with the proper focus on margins. Gordon, you want to add anything to that?
I'd just add that it's not a one-size-fits-all type of a margin structure for the emerging markets. We've been in China for over 20 years, and we've built scale, have several facilities. And to Alan's point, we've built a pay-as-you-go strategy there and leveraging that infrastructure. And this morning, we intend to leverage it even more with the acquisition we just made. In Poland, when we announced that acquisition, those margins are above the corporate average. And then in India, as we're building scale and investing behind the business, we're profitable, but look forward to those improving as we get scale.
Great. I know you mentioned this in your presentation, but I do have a couple more questions here, just asking for a bit more detail on the bird flu concerns in China. Could you maybe just elaborate on how that's looking at the moment?
Yeah. I think the challenges that came up at the end of last year and the beginning of this year around antibiotics in chicken would probably, at this point, have started to become old news and resolved itself. But the bird flu along the coast in the Shanghai region certainly has impacted consumer confidence. And there's been, I think, some hits to consumer confidence in the food supply in China. We've seen less of that impact in central China, and so that gives us some confidence. What we have found over time is that the Chinese consumer is pretty resilient. And because there have been these kinds of hits to confidence at different times, and the consumers have generally come back, it may take some time. And as our customers have talked openly about their challenges, we are also challenged as our customers are challenged.
I've got a couple of questions here about the M&A environment today. You've obviously done a few bolt-on acquisitions, and congratulations on the one that you closed today. Can you talk about what the environment looks like, what the pipeline looks like relative to times past, and which geographies and product categories you would consider looking at?
We have a very active acquisition pipeline right now, and sometimes it takes a little longer to bring them to closure than we might like. We worked on the WAPC acquisition for almost 5 years, and we finally got to the point that in fact, it took us 9 months from the announcement to closing to get it done. But we have a really active pipeline right now. Our thought process on the kinds of targets that we look at in our developed markets are adjacent categories. We recognize in the U.S. and in a lot of our developed markets, it would be very difficult for us to make an acquisition directly in spices and seasonings. We were able to buy Lowry's about 5 years ago. That's been a great acquisition for us. That also put us into liquid marinades, a leader in liquid marinades. And so as we look at adjacent categories in the sauces, condiments area, we believe that's really ripe in our developed markets. In our emerging markets, we want to focus more along our core platforms of spices and seasonings or recipe mixes and buy a leading brand. Now, we made a decision in India to really focus on distribution channels. And so we acquired Kuhinoor, 85% of Kuhinoor, to gain access to those distribution channels. It's not about being in the rice business. It's about being able to bring our value-added products like rice mixes and masala mixes in India through that distribution channel, and that's how we're building and growing that.
Great. Can you talk about the threat from private label and how you manage price gaps between the branded products and private label?
Well, we don't control what the retailers charge for their products or our products, and we do see some significant price gaps in our developed markets. the way we tend to think about our the category, especially spices and seasonings, has a lot of different price points. Everything from opening price point at about a dollar to private label to our core line to our gourmet line to some of the super premium lines, and there's a consumer segmentation that goes with that. So what we want to do is have offerings in each one of those categories and help the customer, the retailer, manage their category to maximize sales and profits. So certainly there is a consumer base in the economy segment. There's a consumer base in the super premium segment. But it doesn't mean that you've got to duplicate 100-plus SKUs in each of the price point segments. And so what we try to do is work with them to make sure that they've got the right mix. Where we see ourselves getting out of line, where the gaps get too big, we've tended to try to get the right kinds of prices at the right time of year. So when consumers are making a decision to buy their holiday spices, we want to make that's when we're promoting things like vanilla and cinnamon and sage and the things that you buy then. And grilling, we want to make sure that it's right at that point and not all. It's not like we're promoting all the time and to get it. We want to make sure we hit the right price points.
Great. I've got a couple of questions on growth in the U.S. market. Is there still room to grow domestically with your core established products, or do you need new products to expand the category?
I think there's still room to grow with our core established products. We still see distribution opportunities. We see certain markets in the country where our shares are not what they are nationally, and we see opportunity to build and grow those. But innovation is really important in our established markets, because if we're waiting for consumers to just come and replace the cinnamon that they've used up, it's going to be a pretty long purchase cycle. And so by bringing new products and getting people to the category more often, and the consumer shops our category in the U.S. about six times a year. They aren't buying the same product every time they come, but they're shopping the category relatively frequently. And so what we want to do is offer them new items that give them a reason to keep coming to the category. And when they do, they may remember that they're running low on cumin and repurchase some of those cycles. But it's a good blend of driving our core platforms, and we do that through recipe marketing and helping people find new uses for the products. But we also do it with product innovation so that they have a reason to visit the category.
Can you comment on why advertising spending is rising much faster than sales at the moment, and how you measure its effectiveness?
Sure. We have for a long time seen opportunity in increasing our advertising spend, because we've been at relatively low levels compared to other consumer goods companies. We've been more of a trade, historically more of a trade-driven company, and have great trade relationships and have built on those. But we also believe that there's opportunities to build and grow our brand. And the reason I think we've seen some of the ROIs that we have is that we still see opportunities. We've got a lot of great products that lend themselves well to advertising. Things like our Grillmate products, there's still a huge amount of grilling that's done without anything on it. Or they're using Italian salad dressing as a marinade. Or they're adding barbecue sauce after they've grilled. And so we see real opportunities at continuing to expand the penetration. Grilling, our Grillmate's penetration is still less than 20%. And so we see real opportunities to drive it and by making it top of mind for consumers.
Great. I've got a few questions on margins and the growth prospects in the consumer business versus industrial and between the emerging markets and developed markets. If you could sort of parse that out, top and bottom line, that would be helpful.
I'll let Gordon do some work first.
Okay. All right. In looking at our margins and our growth algorithm, there's a couple of areas where we continue to see opportunities for margin improvement. So looking at the consumer business relative to the industrial business, our acquisition activity over time has generally been more in the consumer space, and we would expect that to continue as we look into the future. And those tend to be higher margin structures. So as the portfolio, and you can see historically the portfolio has drifted from drifted towards a higher percentage of the total portfolio towards consumer, we would expect that to continue. Within the industrial segment itself, we expect to see that business to continue its margin improvement as well. and it's not as if we don't expect that to grow, but they need to grow in areas that leverage their structure and get paid for the capabilities that they bring. So we'll continue to look to margin up that business through product mix and focusing on the right customer portfolio. From an emerging market versus a developed market, you know, we'll be doing deals and growing in both those markets. We don't take a pause on growth in the developed markets. If you refer back to the categories data that Alan shared, we have healthy growth rates in our developed markets where the margin structure is quite healthy. But we will continue to do emerging deals, and we'll leverage that scale as those businesses grow, and we'll seek to improve their margins as well.
Great. Could you update us on the discussions regarding getting spices and seasonings onto the food pyramid? And that didn't come from me this time.
Sure. No, we certainly believe that, and we don't know what's going to happen with the food pyramid. I think they're still picking the panel that's going to make the decision on what the next food pyramid looks like. And certainly we have been pretty strong in communicating our messages on what the benefits of spices on health. And it's not so much that we're not advertising health claims or anything like that, but by using more spices, which tend to be natural and have positive benefits, you can also eliminate some of the stuff that you should be eating less of, like salts and fats and sugars, which make products taste great. But we believe spices have a key role in that. And as that's been communicated, and they're looking at the food pyramid, or in this case, it's going to, I think, be a plate and an allocation plate. Spices and seasonings are something that you can eat unlimited amounts of because they tend not to add calories and they tend not to add fats. Whether or not it ends up officially on the food pyramid, that will be determined, but we do believe there is a great opportunity and an emerging recognition that spices, the more you use spices and seasonings, the less you have to use of other stuff.
This may be another one for Gordon. How significant is the low interest rate pension problem, and is there a plan to address it?
We've already indicated for this year the headwind is $22 million impacting our earnings growth by 11 cents a share. We've already taken steps to address it. We funded up the plan at the end of last year and the beginning of this year. We've also closed the U.S. plan to new entrants a year ago. We had similar actions in the U.K. and Canada. So we're looking to minimize the volatility of it, and we'll continue to evaluate other opportunities to minimize that volatility.
Why does the company maintain a B class of shares, and could that be subject to review?
Well, we get this question in our shareholder meeting, and we've had the separate voting class of shares since 1949, the shares trade pretty well in line with each other. They have the same dividend, and at this point, we're not considering any change to that structure.
Who would you consider to be your key competitors on the consumer and the industrial side? Is it IFF? And are there many new entrants into this market?
Yeah, we get new entrants in the spice category every week because there's very low barriers to entry. You can get in the business, and some of you heard me say this, you can get in the business with a garage and a funnel. We tend to have our strength through our trade relationships and our distribution strength. And as you see in our U.S. market, we have about 50% share. We have about 50% share in the U.K., and private label is about 50% share in the U.K. And so we'll continue to see small, fragmented competitors that we're dealing with. Around the world, our largest competitors are Nestle and Unilever, with the Knorr brand and with the Maggi brand from Nestle, and more in recipe mixes. From the pure spices and seasonings, it tends to be a lot of smaller, fragmented regional competitors that do a great job. Now we've focused on certain markets, so we're significant leaders in France, for instance, with a very low share of business in Germany, and there's a very strong competitor in Germany. So we tend not to overlap in markets. We believe that we are better off to drive growth and drive our shares in markets where we are strongest, as opposed to try to beat our heads out for half a share point in a tough market.
Can you discuss the mix shift in the category? It sounds as though there's a bifurcation in that the value consumers are trading down, whereas higher-end consumers are trading up to premium products. How do you think about this over the longer term?
Sure. I think that's a function in a lot of categories and a lot of businesses, whether you're talking about cars or food, where there is a value consumer and a premium consumer, there still is a lot of volume in the middle. And so we want to make sure that we're not abandoning that middle. But what we try to do is make sure that we've got offerings at both ends of the spectrum. And our value offerings have the same level of food safety, but they may be from different origins. And so you know, we may offer Mexican oregano instead of Mediterranean oregano, which we'll offer in the gourmet range. And that's how we differentiate it. And we do try to differentiate the products along each part of the spectrum. We recognize and we're very excited because what we see growing very fast is more the premium market, where consumers are looking for variety, for meal inspiration, and by bringing recipes and by making sure that we have the products that they're looking for, we see lots of growth in that. And we see that in emerging markets as well. We've taken more of a premium strategy in most of our emerging markets. And so we believe that will be a winning formula for us.
Can you talk about your plans for growth in emerging markets? You've done a series of bolt-on acquisitions, joint ventures. As you look forward, is it going to be more of the same, or might you consider doing something more transformational?
In emerging markets, we do look at this a lot. We don't see on the short-term horizon a transformational opportunity in emerging markets. What we see in our core platforms are more bolt-on type opportunities. Our targets tend to be family-owned businesses that are really strong in a certain market. And we develop relationships with them and nurture those relationships over a matter of years, recognizing that in most cases we're going to be the best buyer for their brands, just like we were with Camus. We had a relationship with the owner for more than 10 years. And at a point it made sense for him to exit the business. And so we see more of those as the opportunities. Our objectives are to enter and establish a majority ownership that we can consolidate. On the other hand, we're pragmatic. So as we looked at Turkey, for instance, we had a very strong partner with strong distribution strength that we could build a brand behind, rather than going it on our own and investing and growing a small brand. And so, you know, what we see in Turkey is in a short year we've become the number two brand in the modern trade. And so we see opportunities to continue to build and grow. So we're more pragmatic, but ultimately what we want to find is a path to majority control. Anything
nope.
to add there?
You mentioned that the commodity cost outlook is getting easier, but more broadly, how does McCormick buy and hedge on input costs?
You want to?
We have to hedge because of the uniqueness of the types of items we buy. We hedge through taking positions in those commodities. There's not a large forward market in a lot of the items we buy. As a result, therefore, we have a global sourcing team that acts as our eyes and ears on crop issues or opportunities. And as a result, you'll sometimes hear us talk about our inventories being up due to strategic buys, and that really is the nature of our hedging. The other way we hedge, primarily on the industrial business, is because the margin structure is lower, it's really through the pricing mechanisms and the relationships we establish with our customers, where we have pass-through mechanisms on those commodity costs, or we will take positions in conjunction with a price that is established in conversations with those industrial customers.
I'd add, you know, while we see short-term commodity costs are a little more benign this year, I think the long-term trend is that prices are going up because of demand from emerging markets, because of the focus on taking land that's been agricultural and turning it into more housing and urban development. I think long-term there's going to be upward pressure on commodity prices. We've had several decades until the last 5 years of almost no commodity inflation. You get a little jump when the weather's bad and there's an event, and then it tends to settle back in. I think we're if you look at a long-term trend line, it's going to continue to be up. And so I think every company, and we're no exception, has to figure out how to deal with costs and pricing strategically to be able to meet that.
Can you focus on the U.S. Market for a second? How is the retailer environment at the moment, and how does that compare to the food service sector, and perhaps particularly with respect to the rise of group purchasing organizations?
The retail environment, as it has been for my entire time, is volatile. So there are winners and people that are doing well, and there are companies that are struggling to build and drive their share. I think the companies that are doing really well have found a way to differentiate their offerings, either because they have a passion for food and they're building, or they have a unique price positioning. So they have to find a way to differentiate, and what's getting squeezed are the ones that are trying to be everything to everybody. But it is volatile, and so we believe from our standpoint that we develop relationships across multiple channels and across and with all of our customers so that we're fitting the needs that they have. So we've been successful in the dollar channel, been successful in the mass merchandiser channel. The emerging e-commerce area is another one that we are working with that we see long-term growth opportunity in. So, I would say that it is challenging. We've had buying groups for a long time, and so we've been able to manage through the large wholesalers to be able to reach the independent grocers that they serve, as well as the large chains. And so we've got customer teams that are focused on large retailers. We've got customer teams focused on regional wholesalers as well.
As you think about the next 5 years or so, what do you see as the biggest challenges and opportunities that McCormick faces over the next 5 years?
I think we've got tremendous opportunities over the next 5 years. We have fairly recent presence in new markets. And so I think we'll continue to drive our growth as we bring the innovative products that we have in our core markets into those markets. So as an example, the recipe mix category that we've just entered in Poland looks to be have a lot of growth. Our growing and developing business in other parts of Eastern Europe like Russia have great opportunity. But as we build our business in Western Europe, our homemade dessert business in France has continued to bring good innovation and to drive good growth in spite of a fairly challenging environment. I do think there's a lot of challenges and headwinds, and so you can be a glass half full or a glass half empty person, because there are going to be challenges. We're going to continue to deal with, I think, stress on the consumer. I think commodity prices and costs are going to be something that we're all going to have to continue to manage. I think in the food industry specifically, there's going to be continual change. I think we've had a fairly benign consolidation environment over the last 10 years. It looks like that's picking up. And so what that means are changes to customers that present both challenges and opportunities. And so what we try to do is to adapt to all those and make sure we've got our costs right, that we've got our employees engaged in those markets where they need to be, that we've got the strong customer relationships, and recognize that in whether it's a consumer or industrial business, we have to earn it every day. So we have to have great service and great innovation and value that hit what our customers are looking for.
And then maybe finally, as we wrap it up, because we're running out of time, because you made a few comments about the WAPC acquisition that closed this morning. Again, congratulations. What's so exciting about this particular business for you?
One, it really gives us a strong presence in central China. We've been focused and built our business around the coast, and so this gives us a really strong presence in central China. These products are really complementary, so when we first walk through the plants, they look like our plants. They're running the same kind of equipment, maybe different products and different blends, but it looks very, very similar. So we see great opportunities to expand the McCormick Wei Hao Mei brand more broadly into central China. We also see opportunities in this category with bouillons to grow not only the consumer business, but the food service business that's around that. So it's one that we see great, great opportunities for.
Great. I'm afraid we've run out of time. Thank you so much to Alan and to Gordon for coming along, and thank you for getting up so early this morning. Cheers.
Yeah, thank you all.
Thank you. Thanks for coming.
Alexia, thanks for having me.
Thank you.